advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am. Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am. Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
You all right, Dave?
I'm hanging in there.
Jesus Christ.
I'm finding my mojo.
What's the, I have the Pavlovian response to the clang ding when it goes really well. My wiener moves a little bit. Is that okay? Do I need help?
Yeah, you do need help.
It's a problem.
It is?
Yeah.
It's a gratification. It's just like a reward for job well done, though.
Yeah.
Right?
I wasn't talking about that.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that. You just need help.
Yeah, it was just, you asked, I told. Mm.
Yeah. You asked, I told.
Dang.
I'm trying to wake up.
I'm going to have to read the questions.
I need some chocolates.
Dave's going to snuggle all his stuffed animals over there.
Yeah, I have a lot of them now.
I'm going to build you a big-ass crib. Me and Brad are going to build you one.
I like them.
I need food. I didn't eat. I wasn't really hungry when I left the house. And then, as soon as I kind of got here, I was like,
I have a banana if you want.
I'm kind of hungry. That might help, but I'm not going to eat it right now. But I was like, yeah, I'm kind of fucking hungry.
I had delicious stir-fried noodles.
Ooh, I went to the mall and had chicken teriyaki bowl, some fried rice.
What did you go to the mall for? I never go to the mall.
To get fried rice.
Oh, you went there just for the food?
Oh, fuck yeah.
What's the place?
It's just the little
Is it the place that gives you
chicken?
Free chicken on a stick when you walk
Yeah. I forget the name of it. Sicorio or whatever it is. It's the Japanese.
I've never had that. I thought
white rice,
isn't that the place that got shut down for roaches and shit?
I don't think so.
I think so. Maybe. That place got shut down.
I don't care. It's good.
Wow.
You walk by and they try to peddle chicken on a stick.
That's chicken on a stick.
Damn good eating. Don't eat the stick or get internal bleeding.
People in the street eating chicken and meat.
Yeah. That's it. That place.
That one. That's the one.
That's the place.
Yeah. People in the street eating chicken.
It's
and
like
meat.
Sakuru or something. I don't know. I just get white rice, steamed veggies.
Why do they make the name so hard? What's the
pizza Japanese.
Place? Japanese. Sabaro.
Sabaro. Yeah, that's Italian.
Saburu,
that's Italian.
Sabaro.
Although calling that a pizza place is a bit generous.
I don't know. It's pretty good. Sabaro? Have you had it?
Yeah,
have you had it in a while?
Forever.
They got like calzones
Take-o
up in Beal. There.
I can't pronounce
they
any
got,
of them.
They got a Five Guys in there. It's like Brent's bedroom.
I heard that shit wasn't that good. That's
it's
a good
not.
Joke.
It's
I heard
not.
Your joke was better than that restaurant. Yeah, I heard it was disappointing.
Yeah, it was okay. It's expensive.
Like Brad's bedroom.
Yeah. Disappointing.
That's right. Ding. Thank you. I felt it.
Yeah, that's a good one. It was okay. Because I wanted the teriyaki chicken. And Sherry and my boy got cheeseburgers and yeah, I took a bite and I was like, it's okay for $8 though. Not really. And that's just the burger. It was like $7.99 for a burger. And it's like a two patty burger, but they're not all that big. And then fries, like it was $25 for a cheeseburger and fries and one drink.
Damn. Yeah, that is.
Yeah. Amusement park.
I swear to God, I was going to say that.
Yeah, I was expecting to get a big ass, like fucking 2 foot long corn dog with that meal.
Yeah.
But it didn't
Did I tell
happen.
The story about my son being so excited about the little burger joint opening up? So on Rosedale and Callaway, so those that are local, the rest of the world doesn't care. But where my daughter goes to school, we drive past this little place and it's been under construction for 8 months. It was a burger place a long time ago.
Is that the Robo place?
No, it's called Super Tom's Burgers is what it's
called.
That
thing's gone.
But it's down past
the Super Tom's. Yeah, they've been
Super
around
Tom's.
For a long time.
It's different though. There's Tom's Burgers and Super Tom's has been around for a long time. I might be Boiled saying it down. Wrong then because I just talked to them. I just talked to them about that situation exactly to the owners, to their face. Mm-hmm. So it's something different though. But we've been driving past that place for 8 months. It's been under construction because there's just like drama with construction, like just not happening. But my son was like, when they go, we're going to go on the first day. He's, I don't know. He became like just infatuated with the fact that we're going to drive by and we're going to get French fries or some shit. Yeah. So we go by it every day. And then finally there was like three balloons just sadly in the wind. No fucking cars. And the open sign was lit up. And he was just like, Dad, they're open. I was like, okay, after school, we'll go there for dinner. So we went and I told the lady the story and shit. That burger place is fucking badass. If you're in Bakersfield, it was really good. And like, I'm a huge like Frosty King fan and that place is good, but I'm going to have to say Super Tom's was better than Frosty King. They're like charbroiled burgers. So you could actually taste. It was kissed by a flame, Dave. Kissed by a flame. I'm going to say that. But it was cute. We fucking came the next day, like on the way back from school, we were driving and we had told the story that my son went by there every morning. Coincidentally, she was like at the drive-thru window and like,
waving.
Didn't know what car we have. Saw my son in the back seat of the car as we drove past the place and waved. And he got so fucking excited.
That's funny.
He was like, they waved at me, Dad. They know who I am. I was like, yeah, you're famous.
You're a celebrity.
Yeah.
No, there's a place in town that opened recently that doesn't have anyone cooking the food. It's just nothing but robo cooks cooking all the food.
In town?
Mm-hmm.
Where's that at?
I have no idea.
The robo cooks. What's it called?
How do you know it exists?
Why do you bring up this place that has no name and you know where?
No cooks, no name and no location.
Well,
this sounds funny.
One of my classes, we talk about AI and robotics and all this stuff, and it regularly comes up, and people are like, oh, did you go to that place? That I have no interest in eating a burger, so I really don't give a shit. I think they said it's like closer to Oildale. I have no idea what that means.
Nah, there's one tweaker in the back pulling cable and shit. He's on a unicycle and just pulling fucking wires.
He applied for the job. They're like, would you like the position of Geppetto, sir?
They just spray painted him with Rust-Oleum. He's silver. It's all... He's just fucking
flipping
shit.
Burgers.
There's a wizard behind that curtain, sir.
Yeah.
What would you do for a hit of meth?
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, I was going to say it has to be in Oildale because just robots are way better than any workers that are going to work there.
That's true.
So anyway, we have a question. Billy Flat is a Lagoon Krypton levitator. I have no idea what that is.
God damn. Green beans.
Said,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they float them.
Yeah.
Like cranberries, ocean spray. Recently became a non-FFP. So he's not a fuck face peasant anymore. I'm assuming it's a he, Billy, but could be a woman. I'm using it he.
Is it IE or Y?
IE.
That's probably a female.
You think so?
Yes.
What's the last name?
Flat. I don't know how that would have given away. It's fucking Guzman.
Brent. I just want to feel it out. Yeah,
Billy Flat.
He said Guzman, I would have said as a boy.
Yeah.
Flat was, it just felt flat. It was weird. I didn't know what to do. I was like, that was non-generous.
So Billy Flat. Okay, so we'll say she is a non-FFP now. So now she is wondering if Brent will reply to her and take her out to a nice steak dinner and maybe dessert. That's what the question was.
I will buy you a gift certificate to Robosville, Kentucky, if you're local and I can find that.
The question was better when it was a he, but now it's changed.
Yeah, that's so true. That changes things.
It got weird.
Yeah, it did get weird.
It's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, they would have went out on a nice date.
Yeah.
I would have done it for sure.
So, so that's the question. I don't write them. I just say them. So.
And by the way, I can't remember who called it this on the SK Ultra fan group, but they referred to the opening of the show as the Magic 15.
The Magic 15. Wow.
Which I thought was pretty fantastic. Wow. So we're deep into the Magic 15 right now.
Brad calls his the Magic 4. Yeah. It's amazing what he does with that.
Yeah. Just four fingers. I have Barbie crotch.
Four fingers. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Put a hurting on somebody.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't even like pile them up.
You do fucking samurai
like
blade.
Like a fence? Like a karate
this,
chop?
Yeah. Yep. It's fucking, this is my fucking shoryuken.
Yeah.
Judo chop.
Yeah. It's my fucking.
That's the chopper, not the shocker.
Yeah, my shuto. Yeah.
It is a shuto.
You leave the thumb out though?
Yeah, fuck yeah. That's the fucking, that gets the clit.
Yeah, no, I know.
Fucking jabber.
I'm aware. I just didn't know you could do the whole
thing. That's hand jabber. So. The whole chopper.
The clit jabber. That's going to be the license plate. That's available.
That's actually available.
He told me.
They won't get you that.
He's like, I don't know, man. Pimp jabber. He's like, they will screen it if it PMP? Seems like it's something.
PMP, JBBR?
He said he's seen some shit that he's put out some plates that he was like, wow, they let that go through.
Yeah. PMP, yeah. You could just be like, my pro motor performance something. You know, like that's what it stands
that
for.
That didn't sound convincing at all.
My
on paper, it would, okay?
My sister, my oldest sister, the one who actually taught me how to shoplift, she loves 7 and 7s, the drink, mm-hmm. and she wanted her custom
Seagram 7 and 7.
Yeah. And she wanted her license plate to say 7 and 7, and she knew that they were going to fuck with her at the DMV. So she got a bunch of photos. She got 14 photos of coworkers' children. Mm-hmm. And took them with her to the DMV.
Said they're all children.
And they said that they couldn't give her 7 and 7. And she acted like she had no idea why not. Like she'd never heard of a 7 and 7. And they were like, well, why do you want to call it that? And she said, because I've adopted 7 children and my sister has adopted 7 children. And we always refer to them as the 7 and 7. And she pulled out the props.
All the pictures.
Of the photos and started talking shit and making up stories about them. And one was like, that's so sweet. Yeah, we'll let that go through.
Oh, nice.
So then she got 7 and 7 by finagling her.
She's just driving down the road drinking 7 and 7. Woo, fucking one titty flapping out of the window like a dog's fucking tongue.
I thought you didn't know my sister.
Yeah. Oh, I know her. I know that titty anywhere.
That was, yeah, well.
So,
Lady Boner Shit posted a picture of, I don't know how you get away on Instagram, of someone like fucking roundhouse kicking a girl right in the tit, like,
yeah.
Bare chested, huge boobs, and this guy standing there all karate stance and fucking whop kicks this chick in the titty.
Did he have black Wranglers on?
I don't know. And black Wranglers?
Yeah, that'd have been better. Yeah, if you didn't have black Wranglers on and a boot, yeah, you fucked up.
It was more of a slap. You know, he was like the top of his foot.
But you still could have brushed it with the boot. I mean, the Walker Texas Ranger roundhouse kick, like, you have to go with that. Fucking Carlos Nerez would be disappointed. Anyway, I was thinking this episode, talking about Johnny Cash, I was thinking about the Ring of Fire, and Brent always has the Ring of Fire.
He's gotten past it now.
Thanks to Yucateco. You've gotten past it?
Yeah.
You've been eating the jalapeno?
My butthole's bronzed.
It's bronzed? Mm. Jesus
Christ. The jalapeno
Christ.
Fucked me.
Yeah, fucking snappy lip. You got snappy ring back there, huh?
What's snappy?
It's like just a rubber fucking hardened ring of PDM rubber. Yeah. Viton. Yeah.
It's Viton.
It's fucking, it goes up to 630 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. Like just fucking...
As long as you
have ring,
you can't use petroleum products on it though, because it breaks it down.
It breaks it down. Yeah, can't touch oil.
No,
can't
lube.
Touch any oil at
no
all.
Lube. Yeah, all natural lubes. Yeah. Yeah,
you can use olive oil. Something like that would work.
Capsaicin oil works actually, as long as it's from habanero. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
as long as it's not actual.
My partner's got to be up to it though. Yeah. I mean, I'm acclimated, but capsaicin oil doesn't work for all partners.
That's why Kim's elbows are always brown.
Her elbows are weird. Brown. She's just going elbow deep.
She's starting with the
What's
elbow.
That?
Yeah.
That's the Muay Thai.
Elbows are brown.
We call it the gnome.
The Muay Thai. Is it Muay Thai ass fucking? Just straight elbows in.
Wiener's on the glass. The Wams Club.
Skull member of the month again. March. It's March. Damn, this month seems so fucking long, and it's the 11th right now. Like Jesus Christ. Anyway, Jarrell Jones. He said the moon landing is real as fuck. And fuck Brent and his pineapple have an ass on pizza. So
he did not say that.
He said that. He said, fuck you and your fuck pineapple.
You tagged me in that shit. You see it.
He sent it to me. It wasn't a tag post. He sent it to me.
Jarrell would never talk to me like that. We have an agreement.
Well, he can talk to me like that though. So technically.
That's true.
Dang it.
He honored his agreement.
He didn't talk to you like that at all.
Message Brad right now. Keep talking. I'm messaging you. Got some shit to say about Jarrell right now.
So, because you can't text it to him, huh? You can't talk to him.
I'm not allowed
to
talk to him like that.
So, if you want to be a Skull member of the month, just post, comment, and ask tag whatever you have, and just join the group. Be around. Just be around.
Yes.
Be around, and you might get picked. So the sooner the new month comes, the sooner.
We pick somebody.
We pick somebody. Yeah, you're right, Dave.
That's
fucking
the math.
Amazing. That's the fucking amazing.
Math. Yeah.
My phone will not let me talk shit about Jarrell. It will not spell it. I tried every fucking, it just keeps putting Harrell in there.
Harrell.
When I have some time and patience, I'm going to talk shit about you later. when I figure out this autocorrect problem, I'm sending Brad a mean ass message.
Yeah, and then I'll tell you, Drill. Yeah. And talk shit about you.
Heard your mom clips coupons. I heard she observes a great savings when visiting the store.
Yeah.
She's not that great at math either.
Have you been stuck behind a fucking a couponer?
What? Oh, no.
Worse.
No, the fucking WIC people, though.
Oh,
I do see that happen sometimes. You see that and then rip that thing off. They got the next
fucking
line.
They got the fucking envelope. Yeah, they got the envelope.
You
got to
look.
Shit.
You see if they have cheese, honey bunches.
Exactly.
Regular Cheerios. You see
the, honey bunches of oats is the giveaway.
A milk.
Yeah.
Carton of milk.
And the thing is, I'm like, some, like, depends on, it completely depends on their attitude. Like, I've gotten in line behind them and they're just like, I'm really sorry. Like,
they usually have shitty attitudes.
They're just like, well, no, they typically do, but it's like when they look at you and they're like, dude, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm sorry. Like, this whole process fucking sucks.
Right.
Like, you know, sorry, I'm fucking poor and this is how I'm feeding my baby who I, and it's like, that's cool. Don't worry about it. But when they're giving you fucking attitude and taking forever and don't even have their shit ready.
We got WIC when I was like, when Berkeley was super baby, but I was like living in like
super baby.
Yeah. I'm not mad at the WIC. I'm just mad at the time it takes.
I felt guilty about it. I was just like,
that's all.
I'm mad at WIC. Like, the system is fucking,
well, they changed it. You get the card now.
I still see people get the books.
They get the books, bro. WIC is the book still.
Yeah.
EBT is the card. There's no more stamps.
Heebie-jeebies are the
card. But I'll kick a pregnant bitch in the back with her fucking three kids. So fucking kick her right into the fucking cart.
I saw that girl. She had a boot print on the back. I thought it was just a cool design. Or something.
Yeah.
It's like, look at this new shirt.
It's that new shirt.
On the back.
Wranglers and boots.
Size 13. Fucking.
Wranglers and boots.
Stranglers.
Yep.
Stranglers.
Yeah.
Really tight pants. Call them Stranglers.
I do. So, Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash.
We're talking about. That's it for the Magic 15. We're a little over. Magic Sorry, guys. Over. It's over.
But the
now
Magic
15,
as always, is brought to you by El Yucateco.
I knew that was going nowhere. It's here to stay.
Oh, man. It's like Dave's career.
Johnny Cash.
Pretty cool. I met Johnny Cash. I've told that story.
I haven't. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what songs he sings.
Did I tell that?
Did he tell a story about me?
I have
Johnny
no idea.
Cash?
I probably wasn't listening. Mm. I don't listen to half the shit he says because as soon as he starts talking right now, I'm going to start looking at my computer.
You might have just been really drunk.
No. So, my my dad. Where'd Brad go? Where'd Brad go? Are there stairs over there? You walk funny, Brad. I was 17 and I used to go visit my dad. My dad lives in Tennessee, lives in Knoxville. It's like pretty close to Nashville, Tennessee. And I was flying home from Nashville airport to LAX and I was standing with my dad.
On a plane?
I was flying on a plane, yeah. Mm-hmm. My arms are not capable of such things yet until my upgrades.
Right.
I will get metal legs and then after metal legs, if that surgery goes well, I'll get wings.
Okay.
So, but I was standing in Nashville airport and my dad said, hey, that's Johnny Cash. And I'll be honest, I'll be an electrician about this shit. I looked over and I was like, that's a famous guy. Oh, I do know who that is. That's Johnny Cash. Like right off the bat, I probably wouldn't have caught it at that age. I didn't really know yet. I didn't have the appreciation that I wish I did. Like, you know, had I done it a couple years later, I would have known. But he was standing there in black, like a black suit and everything, and just a regular suitcase. He tells me, you have no choice. Like, you have to get his autograph. And so I went into the little shop and like got a pen from the lady at the counter or something. And I stole the pen, if I'm being honest. If I'm being an electrician about it, I stole the pen. So I went into the plane and I shoved my bag in the overhead. And then I went back to first class and the stewardess stopped me. She's like, sorry, can I help you? And I was like, I just needed to talk to him for a second. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I just stepped out of my way. I walked past the stewardess and there's Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash sitting in the fucking seats. And I said, hey, I'm really sorry to bother you. Is there any way I can get you to sign my boarding pass? And he's like, well, sure, son. Nice to meet you. What's your name? And he fucking signs my boarding pass. And I was like, I'm Brent. And he like shook my hand. June Carter Cash reached across and gave me a little dainty handshake. And I asked if she could sign it. She signed it. And then I said, it was very nice to meet you. It's an honor. And I went and sat down and they smiled at me. I lost that fucking boarding pass.
Oh, fuck.
No proof. I'm calling bullshit on this story.
I knew Brad was going to say that. That's why I wrote it on this piece of paper in the sealed envelope. Check this out, Brad.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
I knew Brent was going to say this. No. But yeah, I lived with my grandma at the time when I was 17. And I got home and I had it for years actually, but it was just like, I was,
shit
like,
happened.
I was 17. My grandma moved and then my grandma passed away and it was like in this box and that box and pictures of your uncles from the fucking 20s and shit. And it's, I don't know where it went. It's gone. It'd be cool if it showed up somewhere, but I don't think it's going to, but I know that I shook both their hands and met them, which
so that's check this out. It's kind of cool. I have this fucking boarding pass that has Johnny Cash's signature and Jim Cash's signature.
Nice meeting you, Brent. Have a good flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a hard time with, like, Johnny Cash falls into a strange category for me of people who I respect the shit out of. I completely 100% appreciate their abilities and their musicality.
I'm going
everything.
Right with you. I know where you're going.
But I just, but it doesn't.
But you hate white people. I'm on board. Yeah, yeah. I'm on board.
No, but it just, like, it doesn't hit me where it should hit me.
You just don't appreciate his,
like,
music.
I don't. No, I think that's the wrong term. I fully appreciate the music. Like, I listen to it and I'm like, that's, it's innovative and it's dope. And it's like, his persona is amazing and his craftsmanship and his vision. And, but the, like, and it's like, I don't know. I put him in a weird category with, like Patsy Cline is in that category.
Oh yeah.
She's amazing.
For me, like, for me, and I know,
but I'm just like, I don't listen to her music, but it's, it's like, it's amazing, but it just, it doesn't hit me in a visceral musical place, but intellectually I never listened to it, but I know the songs, but it's like,
I feel like hard to explain. I feel like in every category of music, there's people like that. Like, you have to respect everything that they've done, like on every level, everything that they've done and who they are.
Yes.
But you don't particularly care at all
for the music
or anything. I'll be honest. Whatever.
This is not a stab at you. I'm kind of like that with Prince.
Sure.
I think everybody has their own.
And like, I look at you and you're like, I fucking love Prince. Like, you love that shit. And I'm just like, like, I don't know. I'm just like,
Prince is cool.
Like, it's not that I think he's not talented as fuck. Yeah. So I get you.
I mean, it could be that for anybody. Like Jimi Hendrix, like, oh, Jimi Hendrix is cool. But I'm like, Jimi Hendrix is cool, whatever. Right. Like, you know, Willie Nelson for me, it's Willie Nelson. You have to respect the shit out of him.
And the thing is, like, Johnny Cash is, I mean, and it's why it's hard to explain, because he's elevated above almost everybody in my book as a musician, as a performer, as a, like,
I can't think of very many
people in my brain that I would rank higher than him in their impact, in their ability, in their skill, in their craftsmanship, but it just doesn't resonate. Right.
I think it comes down to originality. Like, a lot of classic musicians and artists, they were just original. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they didn't go off of anybody else's
I think that's an important thing about him, because, like, people typically talk about him, I think people tend to try to lump him into country. Would you say that's...
He made it on country charts,
country
charts.
Western.
Right, he made it on tons of charts, but I think people...
I mean, if you were to listen to him, if you just played a song, it's going to be country western. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of just like, that's because of the twang, because of the style, the lyrics, it's kind of just going to be put in that category.
But it's not really country western. But I mean, even at the time, like, his prime, like, he was like one of them, like, all the articles I read talk about how he was super famous as a country artist. He was playing the Grand Ole Opry. He was like, that was his avenue, even though he didn't sound like any other country.
I think that the genres at that point in time weren't as diverse either. Like, we started to micro break things down. Yeah. You know, you end up with like people now, like Shania Twain, who's like playing on the pop thing and playing, that's not even a relevant name anymore, I suppose. But that was that crossover. Taylor Swift is someone like that.
And that's like, when I listen to him, to me, he sounds more like more rockabilly than country.
Yeah.
And I think it's where people were born. I think there's a lot of stuff. I mean, Elvis was labeled rock and roll.
Right.
I don't know. I wouldn't rock and roll as I think of it isn't really that. Like, so I just think it's the era where they grew up, why they sounded that way. And there were a lot less famous people at that point, famous musicians and artists. So,
and if I'm looking at his lyrics, if I'm looking at his content, his message, even the structure of his songs, I would say it's far closer to blues than it is to country.
Right.
They sound like
blues. And that might've been his background.
Yeah. His background is blues and his background is
gospel
and all this stuff. But I mean, so, you know,
picking cotton, like, there's some really good documentaries on him, actually.
Yeah. So let's get it. Let's get into his life. I know. So you're a diehard. Like,
I'm not a huge. I wasn't. No, not like Willie Nelson. I mean, it was.
But cool. You're still like into him, though.
I think Johnny Cash is a badass for sure. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I learned a lot. I thought I kind of knew a bit about it, but I didn't know that he had such a decline for some decades, where he sort of fell out of public. Like, he was competing with the Beatles at some point, like eclipsing Beatles record sales.
Yeah.
And then at some point, he was entirely irrelevant and not being able to fill a 250 person like venue.
Right. Right.
To the point that he was, you know, just like washed up almost and completely irrelevant. And then a bunch of like Willie Nelson, like the Highwaymen and shit, Chris Christopherson, all those guys were like, what are you doing?
Like, right. Like, you're the guy.
You're Johnny fucking Cash.
Exactly.
Quit singing at that restaurant or whatever you're fucking doing. Come with us and go on tour.
And it's like little, it's like, I mean, one of the things I read was that like when we'll get into like his timeline, but at one point when he had his own variety TV show, he like discovered Bob Dylan and like mentored him and got him record deals. And like Bob Dylan was a friend of his that he met on the show and like, was like, you've got something. It's like,
there's
when someone as massive as Bob Dylan is like,
but he wasn't Bob Dylan yet.
No, but he made him Bob Dylan. You know what I mean? Like, that's like part of the
Nashville
craziness.
Shunned Bob Dylan for some reason. They said it showed Nashville's true colors, that they're very shut off. Like, they don't come to you with open arms. And Johnny Cash said he saw something in him. I don't remember what the word was, but it was like not mischievous, but something like that. And there's a picture of them both having like the Full Metal Jacket look on their face together. Yeah.
A thousand yard stare.
Yeah. Like, if you look it up, you'll see it. You're like, oh, that's funny. Like, but they had a commonality in each other that they knew that was sort of a dark side or something.
But Johnny Cash was pretty much a rebel also. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He was kind of outside the box.
Absolutely.
He wasn't the just rubber stamp,
And he wasn't at first though. Like, he came in there singing gospel and he shows up at Sun Records, and we'll get into it, but they basically were like, nah, this is gospel. Like, someone rumored to say that, I can't remember the guy from Sun Records, but he said, go home and sin and then write me a song I can record and come back.
Yeah.
Which later he said that wasn't an actual quote, but it's the same producer from Elvis. Yeah. I can't think of the guy's name.
So, at the end of the day, he ends up in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, the Country Music Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Gospel Music Hall of Fame, the Memphis Music Hall of Fame.
I don't think anyone has done all of that.
He's gotten Kennedy Center honors, Rockabilly Hall of Fame, National Medal of Art,
WWE Hall of Fame,
Video Music Awards. Like, I mean,
because in the end, he started playing Depeche Mode and Trent Reznor songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit.
Yeah, he was
like reborn.
Yeah, crazy. So he was born in 1932 in Arkansas. You never hear much about Arkansas.
I like it that way better.
Yeah. But he's born in Arkansas and he's one of seven children. He's born to sharecroppers, like the poorest fucking farmers that exist. And, it was seven kids and then the two parents, and they worked land that they got from the New Deal, and they grew cotton and they grew whatever crops that they could get subsidized and so forth. And it was just fucking hard farm living.
Right. And he said that was the only, he said if they couldn't have sang together, that they probably wouldn't have been able to live, like, to do it. That was the only thing that got them through it. So while they were working, they would sing while they picked cotton.
Right.
And that's actually where he kind of learned his first music. His mom taught him to play guitar. A friend of the family kind of started teaching him to play guitar, but he was young. I think it was like between age 5 and 12, I think he was already starting to play the guitar. I read that right.
Yeah, he began to write.
He was already singing.
At 12. Yeah. At 12, he was already writing songs.
Yeah,
because he didn't get his first guitar until he was in the army.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It said, I read that his mom and a friend taught him to play guitar though.
Because I had read that they gave him singing lessons.
There we go.
Maybe, I don't know. That's one star.
Then again,
let's be like electricians though. He would just go waka waka on the guitar, hold it, and move around a lot.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. And at the end of the day, he bought his first guitar when he was in the army. That doesn't mean that he didn't play a guitar before that.
There you go.
You can play a guitar without owning one, so I'm told, but never rub another man's
rhubarb. If you run fast enough. Yeah.
So he, the, like, even when he was young and they did get him the voice lessons, he did three singing lessons and his vocal coach said, I don't want to teach you anything and this is when he was 12. He said, your voice is so unique that anything I do is just going to alter you in a bad way. You just need to start singing, like, which says something.
So I saw the weirdest thing though. He was born J.R. Cash. Mm-hmm. Not that it stood for anything. just JR Cash.
I knew a, when I was in Battle Creek, I knew a guy named JR and his name was JR.
But it's not like, just like, stand for anything. It wasn't Junior. It's just like J.R. Cash. Well,
Johnny something Cash,
no,
right?
It was just JR.
That's the weird part. Hmm. And there were some conflicting things because like when he joined the military, they wouldn't let him join.
You have to have a first name.
Yeah, you couldn't use the initials. You had to have a first name. So he went ahead and changed his name to John.
Johnny.
R Cash.
John,
right.
And then the R still didn't stand for anything.
Right.
But then I saw like some
stood for R.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some interviews about his family. And like one of his siblings said she remembered him listening to the radio so loud that their dad would yell, "John, turn down the radio." And I was like, well, that's bullshit, because his name was JR when he was little. So I don't know. That was confusing as well.
Could have just, I mean, you might name him JR and call him John. John. I
that's
mean,
true.
Well, he had a brother named Roy. And another brother named Jack, so it's JR, so he's Jack Roy.
Yeah. Things went south with his brother Jack.
That was the saddest thing. That's like an Elvis story.
Dude,
that was
so
the whole,
bad.
Yeah.
So his brother Jack was apparently like super great guy. Like,
and he was really close with him, actually.
Yeah, really close with him. He was a teenager. He was planning on becoming a priest. He was super religious, super hard worker on the farm, etc. And when he was cutting wood on a Saturday, he was accidentally pulled into the table saw and it mangled his midsection. And apparently what fucked him up extra was he was there by himself and he had to crawl to get help. Ugh. So the crawl is what just got him completely fucking infected.
Well, it was almost cut in half, man.
Yeah,
like,
he was.
And the sad part is that morning, I guess, there was like this feeling of like fruition that like, don't go.
Right.
Apparently, like the mom and Johnny tell the story.
Something was going on.
He said they all felt like he shouldn't go to work. And his mom tried to urge him, just go fishing with Johnny and don't go to work today. And he was too like responsible, like, no, the family needs money. I'm going to go to work. And he insisted on going to work. And Johnny Cash was fishing. His dad's pickup pulled up and he's like, oh, shit, like my dad's, I'm in trouble or something. He's like, get in the car. And he was scared that he got hurt. And he's like,
yeah, there's something to that. Because when I got hit on my T-bone on my motorcycle, when I left, I had like went to work that morning and came back and it was like a Saturday and I left the house just to go for a ride. And like, it felt weird. Like right away, something was wrong.
Right.
No reason. Right. Like there was nothing wrong at all, but like the whole trip felt weird. And then bam, like almost dying. Like, so like there is some weird stuff to that.
Oh,
like the fruition of like knowing like, hey, something's going to happen. Like something doesn't feel right. And I had that feeling before about myself.
Right.
Well, you don't know it's about yourself, but you just feel like this weird
feeling.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a strange thing. Like, I don't even know.
See, I'm super paranoid though. And whenever, like in general, if I have a weird, bad feeling about something, I just don't do it.
Yeah.
Like it'll be like,
that's
I need
tough,
to go.
Though. That can become agoraphobia.
Well, it
doesn't happen often. And when it does, it's usually like, it's like, oh, I'm going to head to work. And it's like, oh, I shouldn't go down that road.
Right.
Like for no reason.
Yeah.
And then
happens.
I'm like, that's fucking stupid. I'm just going to go down that road. And then I'm like, no, you're fucking not. Take a different route. Like something
told you not
to go down that fucking road.
I've had
road.
Stuff happen before too, where I was like in a turn lane and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to sit here for a second for whatever reason.
Right.
A green light. And here comes this old man barreling through the red light. And I'm like, whoa, like I would have just got smashed.
Right.
But I left the house and it wasn't like right away. It was like, I was out. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to go back home. Like something's not right. Yeah, and so like there's really nothing you can do about it, you know. So I don't know. So, it's a weird thing.
Well,
that I don't even know what that is really. Like the people have that all the time.
It's a simulation theory. It's the code.
Maybe
close. Yeah.
Yeah.
So his brother got cut in half and he carried like guilt with him for his entire life. Because like his dad said it should have been you.
Right. And the thing is, he was laying in bed dying for a week. Like everybody, the doctor, he himself, everybody was like, he's dying. Everyone hang out with him as much as you can because he's not going to fucking live.
Why you tell the other son it should have been you?
And then Johnny had to fucking help dig the grave.
He was a promising son. Like he had, there was a lot of promise around him. He was like a hard worker, like Dave said. He had plans for a career and whatnot.
And then Johnny had to dig the grave.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn. You said that kind of creepy.
That's fucking rough.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing that we talked about in Elvis, like that loss of that brother. And it sort of was like this weird motivator for him too. It was the same thing of carrying that guilt.
Right.
Like he probably felt like he had to make up for it.
I feel like in today's world, like people take it the other way. Like you notice that back, you know, in the 50s and 60s, these people are taking that guilt.
They used it to power
and
them.
They're empowered and they become these like famous, you know, somebody who changed and made a difference in the world.
Right.
And then nowadays you like that happens. And I think people
shut down and give up,
shut down. Right. And it's the exact opposite. Right. I don't know what caused that or why, but it just,
I think you probably don't hear about, like, you just don't, you know, we're not going to read a bunch of research and watch documentaries about the person that gave up and became a homeless person and a drug addict because their brother died.
True. Yeah. I guess, you know, they're, I guess on a scale of things. Yeah. That's true.
It's that thing that where every time you get in the shower, your phone rings and it pisses you off. Like, damn, every time I get in the shower, my phone rings.
It's
like,
not.
No, it's just that happens. You know that because that's notable. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a strange thing, I guess. Mm-hmm.
What's going on, Dave? You looking at yourself?
Nothing. No,
you look handsome. Turning I can see it
off. He doesn't like it.
I was trying to. So shortly after that, he ends up joining the military. He ends up in 1950, he graduates high school and he ends up going to Pontiac, Michigan, works for a car plant for a while. And then he ends up signing up with the Air Force. And that's when he has to become John R. Cash. And then apparently, so he was, while he was in the Air Force,
started a punk band, apparently.
Well, not just that, like he was apparently one of the best Morse code radio operators and code breakers in the Air Force. Like, they only used him for like the craziest shit that other people couldn't figure out. And like some of the stuff that he did was, he was apparently the first American to learn about Stalin's death, because he was the one who intercepted the Russian radio signal and deciphered it. And he was also, apparently there was a famous, the first Soviet jet bomber that they ever launched that flew from Moscow to Smolensk. He deciphered the Russian code and tracked the plane.
Wow.
Like, so, I mean, he was the shit as a radio operator in the Air Force. He wasn't just like phoning it in. And again, like, I just keep seeing parallels between him and Elvis, but in every case, he's better. Like, Elvis joined the army and just kind of went home and sang some songs for all the soldiers. And this motherfucker was like code breaking and fucking
breaking into their channel. They're like, identify yourself. Who is this? Like, hi there, I'm Johnny Cash. Like, what happened?
You want to hear a song?
Damn, I don't have a guitar. I could start
strumming. I'm with the Landsberg Barbarians.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That is a punk band name if I ever heard one, dude. The Barbarians.
Yeah. So yeah. And that was in the army, and he started to do live shows. That was where he really started to learn more guitar, started to write more. And a quote from him on it was, "We were terrible, but that Löwenbräu beer will make you feel like you're great." And then we'd take our instruments to these honky tonks and play until they threw us out or a fight started.
I have a Löwenbräu beer sign in my garage. Cause like whoever had the garage, that was the only thing hanging in the garage. It's like a glass light up Löwenbräu.
That's
beer
a
sign.
Pretty classic thing to find in an empty garage. Yeah. A Löwenbräu.
It's up in the rafters. Yeah. I don't know what it was. It's cracked. I think it does light up though, but there's a crack in it.
Didn't know what it was. It's beer.
Well, I know that, but I was just like, and not familiar enough that I was like, sweet man cave. Like, I
now it's Johnny Cash's.
That's right.
Beer.
It just got way cooler.
You're going to go up there and look for it, and it's going to be with that fucking boarding pass.
That's right.
I'm going to make like,
somebody's going to have a collection of shit that you had that was related to Johnny Cash. Dude, and you should make, fucking know.
Oh, I shouldn't even say this on the air, but I'm going to say it.
Go ahead.
Because just so it exists.
We're not going to make it.
If we don't make it, someone will make it. We should get, we should make Landsberg Barbarian band shirts that are like obscure fucking Johnny Cash shirts. You know what I mean? Because he never,
nobody really would know.
There's no rights to that. Probably. You know what I mean? It was just a band. They called it, you know, and then have like Johnny Cash, like, just a guitar on there. And it says Landsberg Barbarians or something. That's cool.
That'd be funny.
It's the only kind of ideas I got, man. Good ones. Do. Yeah.
That's it. Shit or get off the pot.
That was my sexy voice.
Was it?
No, not really.
I was going to say, if it was, you might want to.
Nah, it's just I just say stuff like turnover. Nah, my sexy voice is just ordering you around. Put your legs up, turnover.
Bitch, turn over.
Hand me that pillow. Do we have a towel? Yeah, things like that.
Give me that pillow.
Yeah.
Shit's real wet in here. You got a towel.
We have a towel.
Yeah. Got a towel.
Oh man. So he ends up serving his time in the Air Force. He goes back to the States, and I guess I didn't know that he was married earlier. So he married a woman named Vivian and settled in Memphis. And I didn't really know about that marriage.
It looks like a black woman. I could not find anything. Oh shit. I'm not saying shit about that. Brad just showed you something awesome.
Yes. Yes and yes.
we're gonna make millions.
No.
It won't be off the podcast. It's off this little side thing that just happened.
Okay.
But yeah, right, it looked like the first woman that he married was black or half black or something. I couldn't find anything about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't find much. I know that he was working as a salesman. They met, they got married. He started playing some gigs and
four kids.
They had kids together, like the whole thing. Cause I always just know that he and
June Carter Cash
were like a big thing and et cetera. But I saw the movie like a long time ago, The Walk the Line. I guess, was he married? I guess he was.
They show that. Yeah. That's a really good movie.
It was actually a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Yeah. But so they end up playing more gigs with his relatives. Once he's back in the States, he becomes the front man because he's the best singer. And again, the Elvis parallels. At this point, they find out that like Elvis just got super popular in 1954. And he hears in an interview that Elvis just went down to Sun Records and said, here's my shit, like play me. Right. And he was like, well, if he can do it, I can do it.
Right.
So he goes down to Sun Records and says, fucking listen to me, with a couple of people from his band, and he's good enough that the producer ends up listening to it.
Tells him no though at first. He said he's not doing gospel right now. And he says,
yeah, they talk to Sam Phillips, and basically they say, you guys have everything that it takes, but we're not doing gospel music. If you come back with your own song, we'll talk.
And he wrote,
so he goes
cry,
home.
Cry,
yeah,
cry.
Yeah. And then he comes back, and much like Elvis, they just shows back up with music.
Yep.
It ends up being a big hit, and he's just off and fucking running.
There's actually a cool crossover at some point where Elvis shows up to the studio just to say hi to Sam Phillips or some shit. And Johnny Cash and his band are like at the studio, or they all show up at the same time and they're all there and they start just jamming together, like the four of them. And he turns on the recording and recorded it. And it's now available. I was going to go find it, but it's called the $1 Million Quartet. And it's Elvis, Johnny Cash, and the bass player and guitar player all in one room playing. But apparently Johnny Cash said he was the furthest from the mic and he raised his vocal range because him and Elvis kind of like clashed, so he could cut through or whatever. And he raised his pitch. But there does exist several recordings of them jamming out in the studio at Sun Records together.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and so you can find
Did you see the footage of him making fun of Elvis?
No, I saw him making fun of a security guard at the prison.
I'll post it in the show notes because it's pretty fucking funny. Like, I read the description.
Is he just like breaking his balls, or is like being a dick?
No, he's busting his balls. Oh, okay. He's like doing an Elvis impersonation on stage. And I have to admit, he was a lot funnier at it. And it went on way longer than you would think. And he just kept like mocking various things about Elvis. And it like, but it wasn't just the same thing over and over. It was like every 10 seconds, it was a new stab at some like the way he would like move his hips and then freak out. And he like recombed his hair. To be honest, like I was watching it and I couldn't help but think that, I just drew a blank on his name, comedian Elvis. Thank you very much.
Oh, Andy Kaufman.
Kaufman. Like, because of the when Johnny Cash starts, he like does this whole thing to redo his hair to look like Elvis's hair.
Right.
And the timing and everything. Like, I had to think Kaufman watched this and did something. But it's a pretty funny take on Elvis. And
that's always a trip when one musician, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's almost insulting. Like when people do impressions of your voice, it's like, oh, you have a notable voice, like Owen Wilson or Christopher Walken. Like everyone does these impressions. But when a musical, like there's a video of Ariana Grande on Fallon, and they're doing the musical wheel of impressions.
Those things
or whatever.
Are fucking awesome.
She fucking does Britney Spears, and it comes out like 2 seconds in, you're like already laughing.
She's making fun of it.
It's like this fucking baby goat sheep noise that comes out of her throat, but it sounds just like Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. Then she fucking clowns Christina Aguilera. Then they do Celine Dion, and she's like, you're like, damn, she does that.
Yeah.
Like, so it makes it like, man, can anyone do that? It's like an ode to Ariana Grande to be like, God damn, like she's got fucking a bag of tricks.
Right.
But then at the same time, it's like, I could do what you're doing.
Right.
Like, so I don't know if they should take it as an insult. It feels a little insulting, maybe. So that's why I'm saying when you're doing the Elvis, you're taking away from him because you're like, you're showing his gimmick.
No,
you're like,
it was,
look what he does. He shakes
his
hips.
Like, it was, I mean, he was busting, but I don't know. I mean, it almost felt like there was a fucking animosity or something because he really fucking busts Elvis.
Right.
And I'll post the link because I saw it on my phone. And then when I was looking for it again later on, I found the same clip, but just the worst fucking quality ever. So if you Google it and the quality is just dog shit, like re-Google it because there's a better one out there.
I feel
there.
Like as a whole, Johnny Cash has like the cool guy status as far as remembrance over Elvis.
Yeah.
Like Elvis.
Well, they
is
had different paths.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
it felt to, I don't know. It feels like Johnny
Elvis
Cash.
Elvis seems more laughable and Johnny Cash is more like, I got respect.
Well, I think it's different. I think it's deeper than that. I think to me, when I look at it, Elvis feels like almost everything he did was a gimmick.
Right.
He knew how to sell records. He knew what the crowd wanted. He knew how to maximize his exposure and his persona and whatever. And Johnny Cash was just a cool motherfucker being him. Right. Like it felt like Johnny Cash is genuine.
Yeah.
And Elvis was being a showman,
yeah.
Which obviously Elvis fucking knocked it out of the park as right. a showman. It's kind of like Madonna. Like she knew exactly what the fuck she was doing.
Right.
But it was all a show. Like it was all gimmick and she knew it and she was a master at it. But Johnny Cash doesn't feel like it was a gimmick so much. It kind of feels like
just
he
real.
Was like, yeah. But so, yeah, he ends up going there and then he just starts knocking out top 10 tracks. And early on, he ends up recording Folsom Prison Blues, which I listened to when I was doing research. I listened to a lot of Johnny Cash when I was doing research. And again, I was just looking at the lyrics and I don't know how many people have either.
You're talking about Beverly Mayer.
No, I was actually going to talk about Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Oh, because he ripped off someone named Beverly Mayer.
Right.
For
right.
Yeah, there's a song called Crescent City Blues that was already on record.
I hear a train of coming, it's coming around the bend.
Yeah, like the rhythm, everything. Yeah. The first opening line is just like pretty much insert Folsom Prison here.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know. He's still a bad. I'm not trying to take away, but damn, he definitely heavily borrowed.
It ended up having to settle for like, he gave him like $120,000 or something.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, when I was starting to listen to some of his songs, I felt like he was the inspiration. There's an artist named Nick Cave and he's in a group called Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And it's super, super simple music. I mean, just like a guitar and a piano, like nothing.
Right.
Like it doesn't really, it's not like Johnny Cash in style at all. It's kind of gothic and dark, but I, for some reason, every time I was listening to a Johnny Cash song, I just kept thinking of Nick Cave, just kind of the darkness that permeates it. And like a critique of the culture that's embedded in it and so forth. But,
dude, there's a cover band out of San Diego called Cashed Out. I don't know if they're still playing, but those guys are fucking amazing. That's the best Johnny Cash cover anything really? I've ever seen. Hmm. Like, dude, slick back hair, looks like him. He's legit drinking like a bottle of Jack Daniels, like right. really drinking right. that shit.
Right.
The guy who plays stand up bass, like, is like standing up on the bass and shit and like riding the bass and playing. Like, it was a really good show. Those guys are badass. Hmm. If they're still around,
right.
Cashed Out, San Diego.
So he ends up doing hit after hit. I mean, we could read through all of them. Every album he records sells millions of copies right away. And he ends up moving to California and he leaves Sun Records for Columbia and just starts to knock it out of the park. And he becomes like the main person in country music. He's like the fucking guy.
Right. And then this is where he starts taking Bennies because he's got 160 flights a year.
Yeah.
And they said sometimes like you would have to go like back to back to back, drive 200 miles if you weren't flying and not have an opportunity to sleep. Right. And at the time, it wasn't unheard of. Those were prescribed. It was basically meth. In a nice little pressed pill and they fucking just, that's what they were. They were called right. Bennies. And I saw an interview with Merle Haggard and he literally like to paraphrase owed the success of the United States post-war to Bennies. He was like, honestly, everyone took those.
Right.
Everyone was
right.
taking those. Workers were taking those. Housewives were taking mm-hmm. those. It didn't make you depressed. It made you happy. You got stuff done. You like, there was just this benefit. Until your teeth fall out and you have scab on your face. We later find out. But
so here's your Nick Cave connection. So it says that in 68, Cash had a spiritual epiphany in the Nickajack Cave.
Yeah, whoa. I was going to talk about the cave later, but I didn't see that it was Nickajack.
Yeah. So he attempted to commit suicide
he with the heavy influence of drugs.
Yeah. But that's, he was in the Nickajack Cave and there was
Cave
a dark,
not Nick Cave.
Descended deep into the cave. So yeah. So Nick Cave, that kind of makes sense.
That is a crazy story. Johnny Cash crawls back in the cave, tries to get lost in the cave, and then finally like falls to the floor and passes out, and then wakes up and said like he followed the light out of the cave or something, and he sees it as like a rebirth moment. And when he comes out, he goes to rehab and he's like drug free for quite some time, one of the longest times possible. But at this
until he's not anymore.
Yeah, at this point, he's taking Benny's. He's fucking going off. Yeah. So he's drunk all the time. He's doing drugs all the time.
And you see it, dude. He goes from weighing 200 pounds to weighing like 150 pounds. Yeah. Like he's on a couple of talk shows and his face is just hard lines, skinny, sucked up.
Right.
People would comment on his nervousness and erratic behavior, but at the time they just thought, oh, that's a weird personality. But it was, you're on crank.
And he's doing he's on tour 300 nights a year.
Yeah.
300 days of the year.
And they said those Bennies were one a day, like a one a day was a prescription, and he was taking 100 a week.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Shit. Yeah. So, but in this era, like this is where he starts to work with June Carter. And they record Ring of Fire in 1963. He starts doing Westerns and TV shows, you know, doing a lot of side acting, etc. By 1966, because of his crazy fucking schedule and all this shit, his wife Vivian files for divorce. And just like, I just started reading incident after incident of the shit that he did as a rock star. Like this, like there's no rock star that I've read who has the litany of crazy shit that Johnny Cash did in his booze meth days. So he gets in a near death, car crash after a drug binge. And the cops discover that he's in a near death state. He gets arrested for smuggling amphetamines across the Mexico border.
You got to get them drugs.
Yeah, you got to get them.
Hit him in his guitar. It wasn't just meth. It was meth and like benz, whatever the opposite, really? Like downers.
Right. And it technically wasn't meth because methamphetamines didn't exist until much later, but it was an amphetamine. They didn't add whatever that extra chemical that element makes it meth. Was. Yeah.
Truckers love it. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. He ends up smashing up hotel rooms. He outran police in his Jeep.
Slow ass cop cars.
I was gonna say, yeah. He went crawling.
He got kicked out of the Grand Ole Opry when he was playing it because he took his mic stand and started dragging it around, busting out all the stage lights.
Oh, nice.
And everybody got
pissed. That's where he got the rock and roll image.
Yeah, everybody got pissed off at him because like the Grand Ole Opry is like
your respect.
Yeah, yeah. That's fucking, and he like totally trashed the joint.
I would do that to the Grand Ole Opry. Yeah, exactly. I just fucking start pissing on the lights.
Actually, I went to the Grand Ole Opry. I've been there.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you piss on the lights?
In the bathroom, the restroom.
Yeah.
Appropriately.
How can you not?
I would have on stage.
Very civilized.
Ran his car into a pole, knocked out several of his teeth, and broke his nose.
Is that rebellious? I didn't wash my hands.
A little bit.
I went to the Grand Ole Opry. Didn't wash my hands.
He bought, you hear about the chickens?
I know there's a thing about him trading brains with a chicken. Like not
Dave,
that.
Dave's going to stop. He bought, did you hear about the chickens?
He bought 500 chickens. And released 100 on each floor of the hotel he was staying in.
This is like Jackass before Jackass. Exactly. Like he's just fucking around.
And in the same hotel, he dropped cherry bombs down all the toilets and destroyed the plumbing system.
Jesus Christ. They must have pissed him off. His pancakes were cold or something.
He destroyed a reproduction of the Mona Lisa with a knife because he said it looked like shit. He said, quote, I took all the drugs there are to take and I drank. Everybody said that Johnny Cash was through because I was walking around town 150 pounds. I look like walking death. And this is my favorite one. In 1965, his camper caught fire in a fishing trip in the Los Padres National Forest in California. And it started a forest fire that burnt several hundred acres. He almost died in the fire. It killed 508 acres. It killed 53 endangered condors.
Jesus Christ.
No, it drove them off. It didn't kill them.
Oh, it drove them off.
It just drove off because they were tracking them because they were endangered and they know that was the refuge.
Right.
And so they had to fly somewhere else because they were fucked.
So he gets arrested for
500 acres.
His quote's awesome,
though. And his nephew even later said, because Johnny he gets arrested and he tells the judge, my camper, there was a problem with the camper ventilation system and it caused a fire. And years later, his nephew was like, no, he was fucked up. He started a fire because he passed out outside and he was freezing cold. And then he was so high that he didn't pay any attention to the fire. And he started the forest fire because he was fucking high. And then
did he seriously tell the judge?
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. He said, I didn't do it. My truck did. And it's dead. So you can question it.
Right.
And then he said, I don't care about your damn yellow buzzards. Yeah. About the endangered
yellow fucking buzzards.
So yeah, they're not even yellow.
They sued him.
They were to him.
Won for $125,000 for the damages. Apparently, he's been the only person
that's ever been sued.
For starting a forest fire.
He settled out for $82,000.
Though. Oh, did he? Yeah. Okay.
I have something funny since we're talking about his drugs. I'm sure you guys have probably seen this, but we'll have to look it up. I always print stuff because it's better visually. But have you guys seen the "You may be high, but you'll never be Johnny Cash eating cake in a bush high"?
No.
Have you seen this? This is a real picture of Johnny Cash. Oh, I don't know what the story is behind this shit because I didn't come across it, but
he wanted some cake.
He's like crouched up into the bushes where like the tree's coming down over him. So he's in the bushes,
yeah,
holding an entire fucking like birthday sized birthday cake looking thing with strawberries and whipped cream, eating it with his fucking hand.
Looks good right now, too. I'm hungry.
But while I was looking for this,
I'm not high, but I'm definitely hungry.
Yeah.
Like so, eating a cake in the bush, Johnny Cash.
The internet responded to this one with, "You may be high, but you'll never be Bush eating Johnny Cash in a cake high." And it's George Bush eating Johnny Cash inside of a cake.
He's eating it like an ear of corn.
That's funny. Oh, man.
Anything George Bush, right? Yeah.
Thank you, internet.
You needed that. You needed that, Dave.
Yeah,
George Bush is back. We're bringing Bushy back. Yeah.
Let's make sure.
These other presidents don't know how to act. Yeah.
You're going
to just make that up.
Yeah.
It does. Not that hard.
So he ends up like basically hitting the bottom, drugs, alcohol, health, et cetera. His career itself is really fucking derailing. And again, I believe this is when he has his epiphany, right?
Was that the cave arrested?
I didn't see anything about the cave, so I'm not sure.
What year are you on right now, for the record?
Getting up to like 68, 69.
About 67.
If we're going to be electricians about it, 1968's the cave.
That when you mentioned the car accident, but in a cluster of other things, but I thought it was
because there were multiple car accidents.
Oh, okay. Well, he gets in 67, he gets in a car accident.
Every year.
Brent, and he gets arrested in Walker County because he has a bunch of drugs with
him. Every year there was drug busts.
In the car wreck. But what was cool is like, I guess they kept him in jail overnight. He tried to bribe them and they refused. And then
like you do,
they like lectured him all night, but he had like a moment of like, yeah, you're fucking right about like consequences and responsibility of, you know, who he is. And then he came back and threw a benefit concert, for the county, as a sorry, like, yeah, I fucking like wrecked my car and was on drugs in your fucking county and tried to bribe your cop. So he comes back and has a benefit show, and raises $75,000 for the local high school, and 12,000 people attended. And the actual population of the town was 9,000.
Damn.
Yeah.
There was a hanging going on.
Fuck.
So yeah. So right after that, that's when he had this spiritual epiphany in the Nickajack cave.
Right.
And then, so June, Maybelle and Ezra Carter moved to the mansion and helped him get off drugs.
Right.
So that's when all that happened. So they pretty much moved in, helped him sober up, and, got him going again. So
and he gets married to June Carter
shortly after Cash that,
in March of 1968, and his career sort of gets reinvigorated.
Right,
and he ends up hosting his own TV show in 1969, the Johnny Cash Show. It's like a variety series.
It's when he wrote that song too. The I saw the sign opened up my eyes. I saw
he
the
was
sign.
With Ace of Base just shortly.
He founded it.
Shortly, he left. Found it. Wrote the lyrics and then he bounced.
He left when they got into electric drums.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
And in 1969 is when he plays Folsom Prison, which is like super famous.
There's footage you can watch that. It's really cool. Yeah.
But I was
Merle Haggard was there, or he's at San Quentin. Like,
I think Merle Haggard was at San Quentin.
So he plays San Quentin too, and Merle Haggard was actually there when he played San Quentin.
And, Merle Haggard's from Bakersfield. Yeah. So my grandpa actually lived across the street from him.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah, or my great grandpa. My great grandpa lived across the street. No, he's a white dentist. No, it was my mom.
Long line of dentists. Yeah.
My great grandpa lived across the street from him, and he would always see him coming in convertibles with different women. And our women would come pick him up, and his wife would be yelling at him as he's leaving, hopping into a convertible. So yeah, he would tell me the story. I was super young when he would say, but
that's funny.
Yeah, Merle Haggard lived right there, and we have a street called Merle Haggard here. Yeah. So Buck Owens Boulevard, yeah, and all that good stuff.
Bakersfield Sound.
Bakersfield.
So yeah, Folsom Prison really puts him back on the map. It's a unique song because the Folsom City Blues was number one twice, because the original recording, which was years earlier, hit number one. But then when the second album came out,
Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah. The song. It becomes number one again. But, and again, you can see the footage and so forth. It's all out there.
Yeah. Cause that was one of the first, like, more popular songs he had, and he just brung it back,
right,
basically.
Right. And then apparently in the early 1970s, he ends up getting a degree in theology, and he became a minister.
I did not see that, but he does get real religious and start hanging out with Billy Graham. Yeah,
he started hanging out with Billy Graham. He got really religious. He became a minister.
Which opened up entire demographic for him, though, because he was always into gospel. I think it had something to do with the record label that he was with at that point, too. He wanted to do gospel, and then he starts riding the religious train. Right. And hanging out.
And he never preached. He never had a church. He never did anything. Apparently the only thing he did with it was he presided at the wedding of one of his daughters. Like he did the marriage
ceremony.
Yeah. But then
that's where the pimp jabber started.
That was,
he slapped them.
That was the first pimp jabber. When he had his TV show, I read this whole thing about different activism that he did. And again, it shows how big a star he was in country music, because he was talking shit about the war in Vietnam. And radio stations were saying, you can't fucking do that. Like, don't do that. And he was like, I'm fucking doing it. I'm Johnny Cash.
Yep.
And he started advocating for Native American rights. And apparently he released some spoken word album that was nothing but songs about Native Americans. And each song was from a different group of Native Americans. And he would always talk about it on his show. And like, to the point, like when he wanted to release the album, the label was like, you can't release this album. All the radio stations were like, we're not going to play that album. And he just kept pushing it on his TV show. And it became number one, sort of in spite of.
He basically called everyone in the industry cowards, yeah, and said, like, get some balls, basically, and
started running national ads,
the radio
newspapers
DJs that he knew that he could get them to play it. And it was actually all happened after he got an ancestry.com, which is one of our sponsors. And he found out about, he was 4% Navajo.
Except did you see the thing where the Native Americans sued him?
No,
because he stole Sitting Bull's lyrics.
Well, you can borrow, but I mean, that was a blatant rip-off.
Yeah, that was a blatant.
It was. It was right at the beginning of the song.
Well, what happened was it was a little bit different. Like the first one went like, ha, 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 and then his went, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but still, it's a ripoff. Yeah. So you still got to pay royalties.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the difference. But yeah,
and then the ding, ding, it was different.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he keeps churning out hits. He keeps getting more and more popular all throughout this. Like, and that was one of the things that impressed me, is like, you, like, whenever you see like the history of an artist, you always see like the dip. There's always like the dip years on almost all of them.
Britney Spears and her bald head.
Right.
Lindsay Lohan and her Coke binge.
But the thing is, like, they seldom come back
Elvis
from
and
the
his
dip.
Peanut butter sandwiches. Yeah.
They seldom come back from the dip with any sort of artistic integrity. They just sort of are still riding their early coattails.
Justin Bieber and his hip hop anonymous tattoos.
Yeah.
His mad airplane monkey.
And mad airplane monkey. Yeah,
but Johnny Cash, like when he makes his comeback after the dip, he's like as fucking good as ever.
Right.
Like his art is just getting better and better and better. And I even saw one interview and they were talking, I forget which daughter of his got into music. One of them started
one of the
recording.
Daughters.
One of the daughters started
She's
recording.
She's good. She plays on the documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in an interview, they asked her, you know, how was it to be starting a music career like at the same time that your dad just blew up from Folsom Prison Blues, like that whole thing, because that was where he overtook
Dad,
the Beatles.
Really?
That was where he overtook the Beatles, was that particular concert, that album, et cetera. And
she was like, no, he, and they were like, did he like talk about it all the time? Like, and she was like, no, he never talked about any of his projects except the ones he was working on next. She said he never looked into the past. He was always planning the next thing. He never lingered on anything success. He didn't care about anything success. He just wanted to make the next thing as good as possible. That's why he was always pushing himself artistically, because it wasn't like, oh, what I did in Folsom, I can duplicate that and make more money. He didn't give a fuck. He wanted to make better art, more music, et cetera. And I read at one point that he wrote 1,000 songs in his career.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
That was Roseanne Cash was the daughter.
Yeah. You're right.
He modified 900 songs in his career. And he wouldn't want to try to do what he did at Folsom by like going to San Quentin and writing a song San Quentin, which he did. So he's smart. There's some thinking behind
something. Well, no, there was some thinking behind it, but I think he did San Quentin.
He did the gospel thing because he liked singing
in
gospel.
He was in San Quentin, though. He wasn't looking back at Folsom.
To be fair, though, he only hooked up with Billy Graham because he thought the guy sold drugs.
Right. And he had
thought
a
that
jet.
Was a street name.
And he had
Billy,
a jet.
Billy Graham.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, because that's the thing.
A nice, nice airliner.
The Folsom Prison concert that was huge was in 1968, but he first started playing in prisons, or 1968 was the Folsom City Blues. He started playing in prisons a decade earlier in 1958. It was a regular thing because he thought that the political justice system was fucked. He thought people were in jail for crimes they shouldn't have been in, serving time for too long. And he had a history for a decade of going in and doing free concerts for prisoners at all sorts of big prisons. So it's not like when he released the album for the San Quentin thing in 1969, he wasn't like dipping into his bag of tricks. He already was before he recorded it at Folsom.
I'm impressed that they allowed him to do it because they said he rode the line of riot. Like they would just be like, man, he asked at one point, he's like, aren't you worried? There's only like 10 guards in here. They're like, there's like 1,000 prisoners. What if we had 100 guards? Would it matter? But his lyrics were like, you know, anti-prison system. Yeah,
right.
And like people, they're getting all riled up and cheering, but it was like, man, they could have fucking torn the walls.
Did you see the news reporter when they interviewed one of the guys in there and she's like, Tyrone, so you're in here under false pretenses. And he was like, oh, no. The lyrics just got me riled up.
The whole anti, like the radio not wanting to talk about Native Americans. They said that at the time, it was considered too radical for mainstream, because they were all about the righteous cowboy who simply takes the native soil as his own.
Right.
Yeah. That was the image at the time. I was like, yikes.
If you look at Johnny Cash, he does have a little bit of Native American look to him.
Yeah, he definitely does.
He's got some sloppy cheeks.
Sloppy cheeks.
Yeah. I mean, you can see it. That's the sloppy cheeks.
Yeah.
It's kind of Native American-ish.
I don't know that those are Native American, but he does have sloppy cheeks.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's different.
Although once you see him later, he's got an even sloppier nose.
He does. That shit just gets
like he really
that
keeps, does.
That shit looks like growing. A pool slide after a while. Like just fucking cricket. Looks like a fun ride.
It looks like the nose from You Can't Do That, or was it You Can't Do That on television? What's the Double Dare?
They had
the giant foam nose where the green snot came out.
That's pretty much what's going on. He's got a hard living nose.
No, but the editor of Country Music Magazine during that time told him, you and your crowd are too intelligent to associate with us plain country folks, and wanted him to like leave country music basically because of all his activism.
Right.
So he's too smart for country music. Right. That's fucking funny.
And then the other thing was, you mentioned that thing about the chicken, and I wish I would have had time to research it and find it. So apparently at one point he wanted to get out of a record contract and he couldn't get out of it. So he wanted to release an album that was so fucking ludicrous that they would release him from the contract because they thought he was losing his mind.
That's not how I read that.
But one of his songs was about him changing his brain with the brain of a chicken.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I'll find it.
You mentioned earlier about the chicken, but you mentioned the chicken.
But when I mentioned the chicken, he then mentioned.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute. Said, I was, you had no, me I fucked said up
the
there.
I said the chicken's being released
right
in a hotel.
Yeah.
He was talking about the.
You had me fucked up there because you were like, you talked about the chicken earlier. And I was like, no, wait a minute. You talked about the chicken.
One quick thing, because I just thought it was funny, is he got adopted by the Native Americans to the Seneca Nation's Turtle Clan. I thought that was fucking funny.
The Turtle Clan.
Because
his nose is slow.
But he is slow growing.
I got adopted into the Navajo Nation's Mud Clan.
That's because you're black. He's a blacker Native American.
The chicken thing, I'm not sure.
I did, though. I'm not making
Mud Clan.
Yeah, the Mud Clan.
What happened was he released in 1984, though. So it's like It was kind of like late in the game. He released a self-parody recording called Chicken in Black instead of Man in Black. And it was about his brain being transplanted into a chicken's body and Johnny Cash receiving a bank robber's brain in return. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
That
here.
Shit. That
that's
shit
when he was
right
eating
there.
That birthday cake in the fucking bushes. I'm
yeah,
pretty
no, that's,
sure.
That's the same.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. But here's same where it happens. He legit does that, and Waylon Jennings said, "You look like a buffoon," and talks a bunch of shit to him about it. And then it says that after that happened, he demanded for the withdrawal from the video and recall of the single, interrupting the venture of it. That it was a more out of like a regret and embarrassment that he tried to get out of the deal. That he was on board with the chicken thing, I think. The chicken bank robber superhero thing.
Well, I'm with, but that the, shit's genius, right?
Because the article that I read said, he in quote, he intentionally recorded a terrible album. The title of the album was Chicken in Black, and the lead song was about Cash having his brain transplanted with that of a chicken. Hmm. And he
well,
did it when
I mean,
the,
technically.
He did
he
it when
did
Cash
it,
felt his record label
like
was ignoring him.
Technically, though, he did it intentionally, regardless.
Right.
Whether
well,
it
maybe
was
afterwards, he might have
not.
Been like a.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, maybe he is like, I'll show those fuckers and did right. That shit. Waylon Jennings was like, dude, come
dude,
on.
Come
you're
on,
wearing
dude.
A fucking superhero bank robber chicken brain suit?
Right.
What the fuck
yeah, come
is going
on, dude.
You're a spectacle. Stop that shit.
But
you're
I understand. I mean, the reason that for a short period of time, Prince quit calling himself Prince and said that his name was the unpronounceable symbol.
Yeah.
It was a similar gambit.
Yeah. He's
he
trying
was,
to get out.
He was on lock
out.
With Warner Brothers yeah. And he wanted to, they had a deal where he could only release an album every
oh,
two or three years.
Clever. Right.
And he wanted to release an album every single year.
So
and
he's
he
not
to,
Prince anymore.
He had to release a certain number of albums and the contract specifically said under the name of Prince.
Right.
So he was like, fuck it. Like I'm releasing these albums. And like that's
ooh,
not
I
my
wonder
name
if any
anymore.
Other artist has ever done yeah. That. Change no. Your name yeah. So you're immediately out of all contracts. Yeah.
Snoop Lion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe yeah, that
exactly,
happened.
Exactly, dude. So
Machiavelli.
Like it might have been a similar
yeah. Did you see that Nixon requested him to play a couple songs and he actually told Nixon no?
Yeah, fuck
again. Way cooler than yeah. Elvis. Like the parallels
even,
keep coming.
Even Nixon said if he learned anything about Johnny Cash, it's that nobody tells him what to do, basically.
Right.
Because he wanted him to play a song called Welfare Cadillac and what was the other one? Okie from Muskogee. And they were both kind of like anti-hippie and the other one, the Welfare Cadillac had to do with the anti-welfare system, saying that people were taking advantage of the system, getting the money, you know, buying Cadillac basically.
Right.
And he was all
hey,
about
that,
supporting
that goes,
like underprivileged
that's now.
Poor people.
Right. Yeah. This motherfucker was in the
he was
future.
Ahead of his time. He was yeah. BMW buying that, getting that wick. But anyways, he told him no and played some other songs. He told him, I don't have time to rehearse those and played some other songs that were
right.
Like the Native American,
right.
Like
right.
Political
game
ones.
Game,
yeah.
Yeah. So he ends up, at one point he starts to tour with Kris Kristofferson and Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and they form the Highwaymen.
Dude, there's an interview with Kris Kristofferson and it made me like, I didn't cry, but
they were like tight.
My fucking
apparently
throat
he
hurt
and Kris Kristofferson
really
were
bad,
like best
dude.
Fucking friends.
Yeah. He sang a song that he had Johnny Cash sing that Sunday morning coming down or whatever mm-hmm. It is. And it's about like, he woke up and drank beer and had one for dessert and it's like put on his dirty clothes and that he wished he could get stoned. And the record label was like, no, you need to change that to I wish I could go home. And then he's like said he was waiting like on the edge of his seat, like, what the fuck is Johnny Cash gonna say when he sings it? And he totally just said, I wish I could get stoned.
Right.
Well,
like,
yeah.
Like, fuck
yeah,
you.
Fuck you.
He's
yeah.
The fucking writer. He's the creator.
Right. Kris right. Kristofferson's the shit, by the way.
Yeah, he's
just
a badass.
A complete side note. He's the yeah. Fucking shit.
He's not a great singer. He's not a great guitar player, honestly. But he's a fucking badass that like ended up in the fucking crew.
And I forget, he's got like some crazy fucking degree. He's like super intelligent. Like,
isn't he, doesn't he play Blades fucking like,
yeah, he
guy?
Plays
yeah,
Whistler
right.
And Blade.
Whistler.
Like, yeah.
He has aged
every,
so much,
every time
man. He was Whistler and Blade and in that interview, he was like Gandalf with a
yeah.
Guitar. Oh. I was like, oh, dude, it broke my fucking heart. I was like, God, look how old he is, dude. Him
he's
and
fucking
Willie.
Old.
Yeah, him and Willie. Yeah. And I was like, they were yeah. Sitting there talking about Johnny Cash and I was like, God damn, man.
Every time you guys say Kris Kristofferson, I keep thinking of Chris Christie. Like, that's who I
no,
picture in my
God.
Head.
Totally.
No, Christie, I know. Yeah. I know that. He's like
governor of New Jersey.
Governor of New Jersey. Yeah, the fat fucking crook. Yeah.
So the other thing was that I saw another video when I was watching stuff of the first time he ever sang Man in Black.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'd ever really heard the song before. I didn't know he was a Man in Black.
So I didn't know he
originally there. Said like the first time he was asked why he always wears black, and he said it was the easiest color to keep clean on the road.
Right.
Yeah. And then he changed it to like all these crazy political stances.
Well, because, but he recorded the song and I thought it was in it because there's footage of the first time he ever sang it.
It became symbolic of his beliefs, I guess. That's fair.
Have you seen the footage of him singing it?
I watched it. Yeah.
And it's like, he even has to have notes because he like literally wrote the song.
I don't know if I saw
before.
The first one.
Because he's at a campus doing a big concert. And he even introduces and says, like, since I've been on campus, all the students are asking me why I wear black. So I wrote this song last night. Forgive me if I have to look at the notes because I just wrote these words. Right. And like, he fucking knocks it out. And I'd never really heard the song before. And it's a dope song. It, like, really expresses his idea of, I'm like, I wear it for everybody who's fucked up.
I think they wrote like, Ring of Fire backstage too, like that.
Yeah.
Like on the fucking spot, just like came out and performed it the night they wrote it. And they just walk out there. His and guitar
just,
player looks like a sad panda though.
I'm just curious if he's a man in black, if does he like go around and tell people to destroy what they like evidence about UFOs?
Oh, men
he
in
has
black.
A neuralizer.
He's the man
exactly.
in black.
He's the original.
He's the one.
Yeah. But yeah, so again, through this whole era, he keeps doing well, musically, et cetera. He ends up, getting, apparently he's still stuck on the drugs, even though
he goes in and out of rehab several times to the point that at one point he has to have a quadruple bypass heart surgery, and he doesn't take any fucking pain meds. He had a quadruple bypass, stapled chest, fucking opened you up, and he fucking tough through it because
he was on drugs.
No, he didn't take it because he knew he would relapse.
Oh, he couldn't do it.
Right.
He could. They wanted to give it to
get
him.
Get on morphine and it's all over.
Yeah, yeah. He refused the drugs and set through that shit because he didn't
just
want to
take the drugs.
He's like, it's bad for him. Yeah, he went to rehab like six times or something.
Several times. So in the late 90s, he becomes diagnosed with a neurodegenerative disease called Scheidegger syndrome, but apparently it's the wrong disease.
Oh, really?
It ended up being like an autoimmune something.
Yeah.
Oh, he had fucking lupus.
So he ends up getting hospitalized for pneumonia in 1998, and he starts getting sicker and sicker. 2002, he releases the album American 4, The Man Comes Around. And The Man Comes Around is a dope song. Was that from this album, do you know, or was that an older song?
I don't even know The Man Comes Around.
Oh, it's fucking bad. It's like about, it's like an apocalyptic, like the devil is coming.
Is that from?
I so think
that,
he's older.
When that you guy listen hits to it, him it up. Yeah. Like did you see on the documentary, there's this guy, and he's in lots of music documentaries, actually. I think he was
Rick Rubin.
Interviewed. Yeah, that's who it is. Yeah.
He's the Beastie Boys producer. He's like a massive producer.
He's a badass. That guy's so cool. So he talks him into coming and recording. He said basically with the intent of just documenting it. Mm-hmm. And so they're like recording in his front room and they're going in the studio and recording stuff. He said, just tell me all your favorite songs. He's like, just play anything you would like to play that you didn't get to play. And he goes, you know, I think like these living room recordings sound better than our studio recordings, man. So he ends up releasing that album of those living room recordings because it's just him and the guitar.
Right.
And Johnny Cash has never done that. He always has a band backing him. And Rick Rubin says, no, you're going to play a show. He books him at the Viper. And he said, this is Johnny Cash. Played thousands of fucking shows, bigger than the Beatles.
Right.
Scared shitless. He said he was like nervous, like it was
just
the first
him
time
and his guitar.
Because it was just him and his guitar, and he had never done
guitar.
That. And guitar. And he sits down on the fucking stage and starts playing, and the fucking crowd just goes wild.
Badass. Fuck yeah, they did.
Yeah, and acoustic sets.
Yeah.
An acoustic set is always awesome to watch, especially if you've only ever heard the band with music backing them. It's a treat.
Johnny Cash was just like stoked because he looked out in the audience, there's like kids holding skateboards. And like had Johnny Cash shirts on and shit. And it was just like crazy.
It's across generations.
It was multiple generations in the audience.
Yeah. And he's, you know, what's, I was, like I said, I just seen a shirt, a Johnny Cash shirt in a skate shop. You know what I mean? Like it's just become a thing.
Yeah.
You know, because I think he stood for rebellion kind of. I mean, just like you guys have said, like he just didn't take no, he did what he wanted. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of, that's what the symbol he's left.
I went to school with a kid named Richard Cash and his little brother's name was Johnny.
Yeah.
And at the time I was like in high school, I didn't really know what was up, but he burned our gym down.
That's about right.
His name was Johnny Cash. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow.
That Rick Rubin, he's kind of like the Jimmy Levine. Like we did the show on Jimmy Levine. Rick Rubin's another guy that's similar
He sends him a bunch of songs and he's like, he gave him Hurt. He gave him Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, Hurt. And Johnny Cash didn't choose it and shuffled past. And he gave it back to him and said, I really think that you should do this and you should sing this song. And his version is badass. I know
his version is
Trent Reznor sucks.
It's fucking awesome.
I'm not like
polarized views here.
I'm yes, not a, we do. Like a big Nine Inch Nails fan. I don't have anything against it, but I think he's very musically gifted. But when Johnny Cash does that song, it's just a completely different song.
And even when they approached him, like, because I was reading him, Trent Reznor, talking about it, and he said that his agent called him and said, "Hey, Johnny Cash wants to record Hurt." And Trent Reznor said,
"He probably screamed like a little girl."
Well, no, he said that his immediate like reaction was, "Oh, Jesus Christ, this is just going to be like some weird gimmicky thing." Dude, but then he said,
"It was like it was written for
right."
Him.
But
it
then
was
he
like
said,
it was "His life story."
He said, "I'm never in a million years going to ever say no to Johnny Cash." He was like, "I just felt like because he's never let anyone record any of his songs," and he was like really worried that it would be fucked up. But he was like, "If Johnny Cash is asking, he gets to do it." Like, he gets to do it. And then apparently they filmed the video 3 months before June Carter Cash died. Yeah. And it's like
it's heart wrenching.
It's a heart wrenching video, dude.
He's
and they film it
and
they film
pouring
it.
Out wine.
The thing is, it's like, I forget what it's called. Cashland, like his amusement park or like little theme museum thing that was actually like closed down for decades. So like the play and like, again, the person they hired to do the directing was like looking for like the perfect place to film it, to like have this feeling.
It looks like Chernobyl.
And he went in there to look for props to use in the video and was like, "No, this is where we're filming." Cause it's just this derelict, just broken gold records hanging on the wall.
And the song's called Hurt.
Spider webs. And he was like, "No, we're just going to film it right here." Just cause it's just like all, and it's literally his memorabilia in a shut down, dusty, water stained old fucking place. He's got palsy cause his hands are shaking when he's pouring the wine. June Cash is like standing on the stairs. It's like it's probably the saddest video I've ever fucking seen.
And then he dies like 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months later, his wife died after they filmed it. And then
he only made it 4 months after she died.
And Trent Reznor said that they were getting ready to record. It was him and the lead singer from Rage Against the Machine, I think, were fucking around in the studio, and they got sent a copy of the video before anybody saw it. And he said that they both just like watched it and were just like on the verge of tears. And were like, "We can't even record tonight. Let's just go get some coffee and shoot the shit. Cause that just fucked us up."
Right.
And, but it's if you haven't seen the video, watch it. Cause it's like when you think, and it's like interspersed, like all the editing is just brilliant.
Shows him
like,
young and
like shots of him acting and shots of, it's just fucking, oh, it's so
it's
moving.
Your funeral. It's the best funeral video.
Yeah, it is.
While he was still alive.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
And it's like, you had
that
to
sucks.
Know.
You record that.
It's like a remembrance.
But he had to know while he was recording it. Like, this is the
his wife's dying.
Like,
I've said that before. I think that we should do that. I thought about it'd be cool to make a website where you start making your funeral video. Like, you make your life video.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants a slideshow at their funeral. And it's like last minute. And your fucking mom and grandma and everyone or whatever happens. Yeah. Dig through boxes of pictures and try to find the one of you on the tricycle. And what song would you have
liked?
How do
we promote that?
That's what I'm saying. You
start making your death video now.
Fuck it. Yeah.
Sign up. $9.99 a month.
You know what song you want. You know what I mean? You could make that fucking video.
Right.
And they just upload the images and make it as you change, your stuff changes and you add new pictures. And it's just your like remembrance, like celebration of life video. And then if you fucking ever die, it's right there. Your login is there. And
you just keep giving out all your best ideas.
Because you know why? I won't do them. I'm too busy. And I want
that's
them.
A big like undertaking there, but that would be cool.
So I want them to exist.
If Brad is the Slim Shady of podcasting, you're the Elon Musk of podcasting.
I'll give one more away.
You're just
and
like, these are my ideas.
Before.
Someone please go implement them because I'm too busy to do it
myself. A friend and I used to talk
myself.
About this, and it was the receipt bank. Like, I want this to exist just so that I fucking don't get a Santa Claus list from Rite Aids and shit. Fucking receipts. You ever go to Rite Aid and get like, you buy a pack of gum and they'll give you 4 feet of fucking receipt and coupons that you're never going to use. I just want a universal receipt bank that all retailers, it makes sense that all retailers are a member of, and they can go ahead and track your creepy fucking purchases that they already do anyway. That's why you use a membership card at Rite Aid or Vons or Albertsons, or you punch your fucking phone number in, or you use the thing at the gas pump and they want to know that. They already want to know that. Fine. You're going to take it anyway. Just centralize that shit and everybody be a member. So when you go and swipe your fucking card, it's the Everywhere member card. It's not the Albertsons card. It's not the fucking Walgreens card. It's just this universal membership card, and all your receipts just get categorized and broken down, and they can sync with fucking QuickBooks or whatever your bookkeeping shit is. And it's like, that's a food, that's a meal expense, that's entertainment, that's gas. Mm-hmm. It can all go away and you don't give me any fucking papers. It's just in my receipt bank account. When I log in, it's ready for taxes and I never wasted a piece of paper, and neither did your fucking corporation that spends every Best Buy, every Office Depot, every
paper. That's a good idea, but to like think about that, like, oh yeah, you could do that. That'd be a daunting task for one man.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean?
I can't do that. That's a brilliant
idea. You'd have to already have a ton of money.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
Yeah, some place can pump some money at that shit and make it happen next year.
Brent just wants it. Like, if you could do that,
he just wants
it
there. Yeah.
I also wanted that food app where you spin the wheel. Someone made that locally, actually. I don't know who made it, but where you go to a restaurant, like you spin the wheel, it tells you what restaurants
you
eat at.
Tells you what to get.
And then when you get to the restaurant, you spin the wheel again, it tells you what to fucking order. So if you're indecisive, you're like, fuck it, spin it. Oh, Subway tonight. Yeah, well, you can't because of diet restrictions.
I couldn't do that.
I am not picky, and I would rather just like, experience something new and not just get the number five like I'm always going to get.
They could do a vicarious spin the wheel.
Looks like I'm driving to San Francisco. Yeah.
Well, going back to Chicago, some vegan pizza.
That's right.
Cauliflower wings again.
God. So, so a couple of months after he records Hurt, he gets hospitalized and he dies of complications from diabetes. On September 12th, 2003 at age 71, 4 months after his wife died,
he died of a broken heart. He had diabetes.
That's pretty much like
that happens a lot, you know.
And another video that I saw, and I know I'm pretty sure this was recorded late, cause you can just, I mean, you listen to his voice and like those late albums, it's very distinct, like his singing stuff. It's not that it's bad.
Yeah.
It's just really different. And you can just hear the age and you can hear the weariness and so forth.
There's a little Mr. Ed in there for being,
they're not,
being electric.
Yeah, they're not,
bit.
They're not. Yeah. It's not great.
But there's one called God's Gonna Cut You Down.
I was going to do my impression then, but it's disrespectful. I'm not going to do it.
Have you guys seen the video of mix. God's Gonna Cut You Down?
No.
Everybody famous in the fucking world is in this video.
It's the We Are the Children.
It's like,
We Are the
but
World.
It's just like, they're not singing it. It's just him singing. And I'm guessing the video was made after he died, but it's like actors and musicians and everybody. And like, there might be one shot of them singing part of the song themselves, or like Woody Harrelson is like falling in a river, getting baptized, or like rappers and fucking Johnny Depp and fucking, and it's like, they all like got in costume, did a shot for like a 2 second clip in this video. It's like, it's pretty mind-blowing the amount of people who you knew it was like, oh fuck, this is for Johnny Cash. Yeah, I'll show up and do a whole day of shit. I don't know if they did.
I'm sure they did.
I think they were all just like, no, this is for Johnny Cash.
No, I'm sure they got paid.
I don't know. No way.
I think they,
those kind of things make me more choked up than like an actual sad event. Like the, you know what like always gets me is like a Beautiful Mind, the, you know that movie? You seen that? The part where he gets the pin. In the fucking final, spoiler alert, when they start setting the pins on the table, that sense of recognition and accomplishment at the end fucking gets me.
Yeah.
Yeah. My throat hurts real bad, man.
But you should watch the, you need to watch the God's gonna Cut You Down.
You're gonna make Brent cry.
Make you cry. Yeah, I want him to.
I'm watching that by myself.
And the thing that I have to
you guys
say
can't be here.
That I didn't know about Johnny Cash is that motherfucker he plays the nipple guitar. Like that
it's
guitar
way up there,
is so fucking
and
high
tilted
up
down.
There.
That's called that's the mandolin.
And he literally strums like over the fretboard.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah,
like
he doesn't
style
strum over
is
the
fucking
over,
strange.
Yeah.
And that fucker is just choked up high, dude.
Yeah. He's playing.
He's
like,
got really short arms.
He's got some CeeLo arms.
Technically, he's half T-Rex.
Yeah.
Like, he's T-Rex playing his guitar.
Yeah, but I had nothing but respect for Johnny Cash. I was glad to have researched it and looked into him. His music is dope. It's not something that really moves me, but I fully understand why, and you should give him a listen if you haven't, because it's really, and I think I was moved by his later albums more than anything else.
Right,
like when I listened to Hurt, when I listened to God's Gonna Cut You Down, when I listened to the stuff when he's older, those do move me, but like his big hits from like the 50s and 60s and stuff, those just, they don't resonate with me for some reason.
Yeah, I like Ring of Fire and a lot of
well
stuff,
you know, you gotta think too, like as a man comes to the end of his life, you know, things start getting real.
Yeah,
and he's had a lot of life experience at that time, and so like that's where that comes from, you know. Like that's just everything that's coming out is real. It's not it isn't a gimmick, you know what I mean, at that point.
Right.
You know, as where some of his older stuff, you know, where he was younger, it was, you know, he was getting famous, he was getting notoriety out of it. So yeah, it makes a difference, I think.
Have you seen the Highwaymen when they all sing together and they each step forward and play their part?
No.
It's pretty badass. Johnny Cash steps up and starts singing, and it's just like rah. Like, because each Chris Christopherson, each Waylon, they all step up there and do their little part. And it's pretty badass. It's the ultimate group. Yeah. It's better than that Elvis bullshit they were talking about.
Yeah.
That's the $1 million quartet.
Yeah.
Fucking Highwaymen, man. Is it time for sponsors?
Yeah.
It's Ben. Ben.
Look at those beautiful waveforms. Look at the lines.
It's Ben.
Look at the symmetry.
It's Ben.
What's Ben?
It's Ben.
It's Ben. Time?
Yep.
Well, guess what? I got surprise prize winners, man. I didn't do it in the beginning of the show, but I got them right now before sponsors. So during the week on the social media posts on Facebook, Instagram, and or Twitter, we're trying to reward sharing and interaction and commenting on those posts. Because honestly, Facebook's weird algorithm, like, you throw money at it, it's like you don't get as much reaction as you do when I offer you crazy bastards a t-shirt or some stickers. So Destiny Danae is one of our winners this week. She won a t-shirt for sharing, I think. Yeah, she shared our post for the Munich massacre on Twitter. And she
gets that's this, it. That's actually, all you got to do.
She shared our post. That's all you got to do, Brad.
That's all you have to do. Are you, wait a minute.
For a chance.
So you're telling me
for a chance,
that I could just share a post
and
get a shirt.
That's right.
Might. But I'm just saying that's all I have to do.
Right. Yes.
But you know how you won't get a shirt? Doing nothing.
That's right. That's definitely.
That's right.
Not
that's how you get, you, that's how you get fat.
One.
That's how
unless you buy
doing
one.
Nothing. You could. You but could then you'd
doing something.
You'd have to do something.
That's true.
You'd have to go to sofakingpodcast.com/shop.
What a good idea.
And buy something.
Yeah.
I love us. I really do. I mean, I know I love me and I like hanging out with me. I like you guys too, though. This is always fun. But yeah, she's so hardcore that she actually has a link to our podcast in her bio on Twitter.
Wow.
Damn. Yeah. She's like, this is who I am.
Wow.
But just in case you didn't know, this is who they are.
I have one word
for
you.
And then it
has
a link.
One word.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And then also, someone else won for sharing our bonus episode. They get the Print Dirt Cheap sticker pack of the week. It's Michael Shields. He shared on Facebook. The bonus episode 16. And so we chose him for the sticker pack of the week. So the people from last week, only one person got back to me, man. I contacted you and you won some shit. Please get back to me. It's hard chasing you guys down. It's difficult. I want to give you stuff. I'm just trying to find you to give you stuff, man. Yeah. STDs, t-shirts, all kinds of shit, man. Comes in a little vial. It's spores. So that's what I got for prizes. It's Destiny Danae and Michael Shields. Contact me. I will be contacting you, but make it easy on me and just message us and say, this is my address. Send me some stuff. But on that note, thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. That is our primary sponsor.
El Yucateco.
If you haven't tried it, try it. Put it in your mouth. It's delicious. Thank you to Print Dirt Cheap. You can visit printdirtcheap.com and purchase printed items and use code SOFAKING to observe a savings. Thank you to De Leon Graphics. He does all of our silkscreen stuff. And as Brad said, you can buy those things, t-shirts, at sofakingpodcast.com/shop. And thank you to Digital Creations. Also, thank you to Dan Camrio Jiu-Jitsu. You can log on to armhunter.com to buy instructional DVDs and apparel.
He also teaches jiu-jitsu.
If you're local. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you if you're local. Yeah. Again, shout outs to Jeremy, podcast we listen to. Thank him.
I wanted to throw something out there. I offered this before. If you have a podcast and you're a fan of ours, and if you have stickers, you want to send me like 100 stickers, I will drop those stickers in the packages that go out.
We have a lot of packages going out.
As a help to you. Like, so if someone buys a t-shirt or I'm mailing out a Patreon package or one of these prizes or a hot sack, if you want to send me a bunch of stickers, I will put your podcast sticker in the packs that go out because that's a bonus for you. It's a bonus for us to give something to people, and it's a bonus to the people receiving it because they're getting something.
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win. It's a trifecta of win. So
that's right.
If you want to, hit me up and I will give you the mailing address.
And if all you have is 100 stickers, get more stickers.
Right.
At Print Dirt Cheap.
Yeah, let's be electricians. We're probably going to mail out 100 stickers before you do if you only have 100 stickers.
Yeah, right.
So, and the people that we send them to already listen to podcasts.
But we'll do what we can. Mm-hmm. So send us. Also check out MTG Cardboard Crack House. It's buddies of mine. I actually helped start the podcast and never went on it. So...
I thought you went on it.
One time.
Yeah, I thought you said you had like 30 episodes at one point.
No, we had a few in the beginning, but we never released them. I still have them. But check them out if you're into Magic the Gathering, which I need to get back in, man. I've been playing a little bit, but haven't been playing with
anybody. Watched the crazy Magic card opening. For some reason, it was in my feed. And this guy bought a $1,300 whatever pack, like complete pack.
That cheap
was
like, ass, yeah.
Well, so he opens it like with all the, it was like, if I get 15,000 subscribers, I'll open this thing.
Yeah.
And then he was like, give this whole like speech about, I know there's not going to be anything in here. Probably we have to realize it could be a letdown. We've all been waiting to open this package. He cuts it open and there was a, you guys are going to know what he's talking about. He threw like a kid fit because he had a piece of eight card was in the package, and it was like
a power nine.
No, it's called a piece of eight, not a power nine, because someone else said power nine to me. It was called a piece of eight and a dual land was the two dual things that he opened.
Dual land, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a power nine.
Is it a beta pack?
I don't know.
Is it black bordered? Was the card black bordered? That'll tell you if it's worth money.
It was worth money, though, for sure. Like, I think the piece of eight thing was worth like $600. And, or maybe it was a power eight. Piece of eight is like a fucking.
Power nine is.
It wasn't power nine, though. It was something eight. It was eight for sure. But I was like, man, these fools. So then, I was talking to my buddies at Lengthwise. We were all hanging out, and my buddy Mondo said he bought a box and found some fucking crazy cards. Like, he got like a $600 card in some box that he bought at fucking the swap meet for $10.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I am not into Magic, but if
and that $600 card now, I guess how much it's worth?
How much?
$1,800 probably.
Damn.
Everything's doubling.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm gonna keep my eye out now, because like, I used to go to the swap meet and thrift stores and shit. Oh yeah, all the fucking time. You can
find stuff. Shut up.
And yeah, $10 for a box of cards. Yeah, I'm not playing Magic, but I'm gonna buy them and then show you guys and hope you're being honest with me.
Like, nah, you've got nothing there.
Nah,
nothing
bro.
Nothing there, Brent.
Yeah, I'm gonna put them in my spokes.
$10. I'll give you $10 for it.
I'll give you $8.
Put it in the drive line and get whacked off by Magic cards.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds good. So yeah, check them out. And then that's it. That's it. Oh, Instagram, at Sofa King Podcast, at Sofa King Brad, at Sofa King Brent, at Sofa King Dave, the Captain Ness _SK quotes. And then what was the other one? The Sofa King Podcast Art.
Unofficial.
Unofficial. Check that one out.
Check out our subreddit.
Subreddit.
/all the groups.
Yeah.
Podcast.
All the groups. Check them out. Yep. Unofficial SK Ultra. Facebook at Sofa King Podcast. Go to our patreon.com/Sofa King Podcast. And the end song on this episode is We Don't Believe You by God MS. That's it. Don't be retarded.
Man. A lot of drugs going around. A lot of drugs flying.
We don't believe you. We don't believe. Don't believe you. You need more people. We don't believe you. We don't believe.
I know you guys.
Believe you. You need more people.
We wild for the night folk. Miles in the midday. Easy like a Sunday morning while the levee gives way. I'm old school, running with a Walkman, talking three-way. Respect the writers and breakers, but most of all the DJ. We all about the craft, they just trying to get the cheese. I feel like the world's a ball of clay, I'm here to shape believe. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't trying to make some cheese. Still I keep in mind that I can't take it with me when I leave. You can pay with your life, that only covers certain fees. Treat this money like it's honey, we some fucking worker bees. They look at us like we pussies, but they couldn't fuck with these. You are not Tony Montana, cause you moved a couple keys. I know some bona fide killers who'll make a sucker free. And they ain't flashy with a bunch of money blowing in the breeze. These rappers telling tales, record sales are off the keys. And I will not be assimilated, debated nigga, please.
We don't believe you. We don't believe, don't believe you. You need more people. We don't believe you. We don't believe. We don't believe, please believe you. You need more people.
We write for the picking, writing for a reason. Rotten to the core, but still the freshest out of season. I'm looking around for something big enough to step the trees. And if we got everything we need, then tell me why you're leaving. It's true, I'm trying to bubble by the time they stop my breathing. The game does not reciprocate, you will never get even. They told us not to sign and come to find the soil seeding. And strange land is feeling more like the Garden of Eden. I celebrate today because tonight we might be leaving. Right behind the spiteful's right to like to hate us out of season. Follow me, then we can roll up something proper while I'm leading. If a hater's bullet raises tiger not and stop the bleeding, drop a beating. I'ma murder anybody, God is feeding. Off the hate, I got it locked in UBs who I leave the keys with. You come with anything other than love and I don't need it. Nigga, my youngest Mr. Ouija, say it and repeat it.
We don't believe you. We don't believe, don't believe.